At the MTV VMAs, the two met face-to-face and Rock knocked Lee's hat off and punched him.
Excuse me? He knocked his hat?
Yeah. Lee responded on his website calling Rock Kid Pebble.
Nice. I like your style, Mr. Lee. Kid Pebble.
Yeah. testifying about an incident in an unrelated case 3 years later, because Kid Rock had gotten to a fight in a Waffle House.
Because Kid Rock. Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmar, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
So this is our theme for this episode is something I'm really excited about. It's famous beef.
Yes, Jaquetta came up with this theme. This is a
beef
superior topic. Famous beefs.
Yeah, beefs throughout history.
Yeah.
So I went online and, let's start off with supposedly the first beef.
The very first
beef. The very first beef. It's biblical beef. This is Cain versus Abel. Biblical beef.
He's serving up some biblical beef.
Yes.
All right.
Some beef in the beginning beef. So this is two biblical brothers.
In the beginning,
there was beef. Yeah. They are two brothers from the Bible. They're the sons of Adam and Eve, right? Mm-hmm. They're the first brothers. And, of course, they get to fighting. I was reading the article because it's obviously written by someone who maybe they're religious, maybe they're not, but this is they grew up outside the Garden of Eden.
Outside.
Down the street. Close to it, but around the corner.
Take a left.
Yes.
It's over there by the park.
Because their parents had already been kicked out at this point. Firstborn Cain worked in the field while Abel tended the sheep. This is probably one of the reasons why I'm not religious, because I didn't like this story.
Okay, yes. The story, yeah. There are two
story
brothers.
Is rough,
one
yeah.
is it with, into in the agriculture, fields, the other one's with the animals.
With the animals. So, of course, it's chapter 4 of Genesis. God favored Abel's sheep offering over Cain's garden sacrifice. And I was, as a kid, I was like, what's wrong with the corn and stuff?
Right.
That's what he had.
No, wait. You go back, because God wants a sacrifice from each of them.
Yeah.
So the one is like, here's my corn. The other one's like, here's a sheep.
Yeah.
And then God was like, I really like the sheep.
But it's not like Abel went out and like wrangled a bear.
Yeah.
Like these are his sheep on his farm. He just was like, what do I have?
Mm-hmm.
If had he been growing bunny rabbits, it would have been that.
Yeah.
Turkeys, it would have been that.
Absolutely.
The other guy is like, eh, I got some nice fruit and veg.
And it makes, you know, God look like kind of, you know.
The favoritism thing.
Yeah.
So, of course, it got Cain got pissed off and then was like, that's it. Killed Abel.
Mm-hmm.
His story's over. And then God sent Cain away to live, quote unquote, east of Eden.
My favorite part of the story, though, is that God, of course, saw the killing.
Yeah.
So he knows what happened.
Didn't stop it.
But who was it? He went to Cain and said, Cain, where's your brother Abel?
That's right. That's right.
Where is your brother?
What would you say?
And he's like, how should I know? I'm not my brother's keeper.
Yeah. Isn't that what you would do, though? I mean, this is basically a Law and Order thing.
Yeah.
They show up and you did it.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know anything about what happened to, a certain Abel? Like, never heard of him.
Yeah.
And I got to get back to tending.
I got
my
stuff
field.
To do.
So I got stuff to do. So if you
God,
can just get
leave
away.
Leave me alone.
So Cain is sent away. So first of all, like, they're already been, his parents got kicked out. So, you know, mm-hmm. he just got to do what his parents said. He gets kicked out. He goes east of Eden to a place called Nod. I don't remember that, because that's not the place where children go when they sleep.
Yeah, that's right, Dreamland.
Dreamland?
Yeah.
It said, but in a last-minute moment of grace, God put a mysterious mark on Cain to save even the killer from being killed by strangers. I don't know what that means. I don't remember it. I think in some cultures, they made him black.
Oh.
You know what I mean? And
okay.
In other cultures, it's like they made him disfigured. I don't know what the thing is. They put a special mark. Because any weird mark that someone has on them isn't going to make people want to kill you.
Yeah, that's right. But a mark of protection.
A mark of protection. So it's like, yeah, you killed your brother, and I'm not happy about that. Your food sucked, by the way.
Yeah.
Get out of here, but I'll protect you. So you can live in misery for the rest of your life. Amen. So that is the first famous beef, Cain versus Abel. I never liked, I loved the early stories of the Bible, but as a child, I was just like, man, that ain't right. Because I know that would be me who would be like, here's an apple. No? Wrong? Too soon?
Yeah.
You know? All right. What's your beef?
This is a Jackson Dickinson duel. So duels were a great way for people to
resolve beef.
Resolve beef, yeah. Yes. That was a thing.
It was fashionable.
Right. Prior to his presidential career, Andrew Jackson was known for his inclination to invoke violence in defense of his honor.
Yeah.
He was just like, anything, he looked at him the wrong way.
You stuffed my buckle, son.
Yeah. Pistols at dawn.
Yes. And that's how he started each morning. You, sir, pistols at dawn. What? Yeah.
He was the veteran of at least 13 duels.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Why did people keep dueling with him?
The showdowns left his body so filled with lead that the people said he rattled like a bag of marbles.
Are you kidding me?
And he's just like,
and
come
that just
on.
Made him angry.
He took all comers. He's like, you.
Oh, man.
But the most famous of his...
I'll take all comers. He just walks around with a pistol like, who wants some?
Yeah, well, he confronted...
Who wants some Andy Jackson?
He confronted a prominent duelist, Charles Dickinson. Dickinson, rumored to be the best shot in the country, had insulted the future president by alleging he cheated at a horse racing bet between Jackson and Dickinson's father-in-law.
He said it in his face?
Yeah. Insults were exchanged, and Dickinson...
Insults were exchanged.
Yeah, and it culminated with Dickinson insulting Jackson's wife.
Uh-oh.
So
he went on wives.
Slandering Jackson's wife was like sinning against the Holy Ghost.
Was he saying his wife was a bigamist?
He didn't say what he said. I don't know what he said.
If I remember correctly, the charge was that his wife had been married before and had been improperly divorced or something like that. That was
the
scandal.
Well, he insulted her. And so this is a guy, he insulted a guy who loves to duel.
Mm, and he went on his wife.
So this was unpardonable. And...
I don't think Jackson pardoned anything.
Jackson kept pistols in perfect condition for 37 years to use whenever someone dared breathe her name.
Hey, you don't have a pistol? Guess what? I got two.
But he used whenever someone dared breathe her name except in honor. So he was ready to shoot anyone who had anything to say about
that. Pretty much says his wife was a harlot because everybody was talking about it.
So they met at Harrison's Mill in Kentucky, and it was 1806, May 30th. It's a warm day.
The very day.
The men were to stand 8 paces and then turn and fire. Mm-hmm. Dickinson was a well-known sharpshooter, and Jackson felt his only chance to kill him would be allow himself enough time to take an accurate shot. So he calmly allowed Dickinson
to shoot
him in the chest. The bullet lodged in his ribs, but Jackson hardly quivered, calmly leveling his pistol at Dickinson. But when he pulled the trigger... The hammer of the gun only fell into the half-cocked position and
it did not
fire.
What?
So according to duel etiquette, this should have been the end.
Yeah, by Hamilton.
But Jackson was not finished with Dickinson.
I'm sorry, Jackson.
Yeah. He recocked the pistol, aimed and fired, striking Dickinson dead.
What?
Yeah, so he...
Can you imagine Dickinson being like, are you kidding me? I just shot this guy in the chest.
Yeah, and he's still standing there.
He's Satan.
So then... Then, after he killed him, Jackson is standing there, and now he's aware that blood is dripping into his boot.
He's like, oh, snap. He's the villain.
And the bullet was too close to his heart to be removed, and it remained lodged there.
Mm-hmm.
And the wound led him to have a perpetual hacking cough, causing him persistent pain, many health problems.
Wow.
But he never regretted his decision, and he said, if he had shot me in the brain, sir, I still would have killed him.
It's so bizarre. See, this is why I have no beliefs. Why is someone as evil as that? I mean, his history, I mean, everything he did was bad.
Yeah.
This guy never did a good thing in his life. He was a terrible person from beginning to end. And then look at him, chilling.
Yeah.
Getting shot. What is he? He's like a rapper. He's like the 50 Cent of his day.
Yeah.
Everyone's shooting him all the time. He doesn't care.
And he
just took a bullet?
Yeah. He took a bullet on as part of a strategy.
I don't like it, but that's badass.
Isn't it?
That is badass. That is some beef. Wow. He had, what, 13 beefs?
Beefs. At least.
Beeves, as we say.
Beeves.
Beef, plural.
Plural of beef.
So I want to get on to some lady beef.
Okay.
This is, the year is 1792. And one lady, Almeria Braddock and Mrs. Elphinstone, are expecting nothing more than a cup of tea together.
Okay.
It is a social call where Mrs. Elphinstone went to Lady Braddock's home in London. But the visit went unladylike when the hostess apparently got upset that the guest insulted her. So I went online and I found this. This is what the woman said. This is why the beef started.
Oh, if someone invites you over for tea, you better be ready.
Well, they were old friends and they were not young
ladies.
Well,
you know what happens when people have tea.
True.
The conversation goes on, it ensues, and
you
don't know what's going to come out.
So this is what...
We know as women when we talk.
This is what her guest said.
Okay.
Lady Almira Braddock said, "You have been a very beautiful woman. You have a good face, even now, but you must acknowledge that the lilies and roses are somewhat faded. 40 years ago, I am told, a young fellow could hardly gaze upon you with impunity." Now, she claimed that wasn't a dig and saying the woman looked old. But apparently, she didn't care. And according to reports, Miss Elphinstone challenged her to a duel. They faced off with pistols. Elphinstone fired first, knocking Lady Braddock's hat to the ground. It didn't finish then, because bitches be tripping, even at that time. The women then took up swords.
Oh.
And came at each other.
This is... Yeah.
And Lady Braddock got her revenge by wounding the opponent, her opponent in the arm, and is henceforth known as the Petticoat Duel. It ended without further incident when Mrs. Elphinstone agreed to write a letter of apology. So can you imagine that? Like, we're just hanging out, having a couple glasses of wine. All of a sudden, one of us says something, the other one's like, that's it. We get out our pistols.
Yeah.
That doesn't work. Then we then move to knives.
Yeah.
And we just fight it out.
But that's the thing.
But then one of us is like, I'll email you an apology.
Them's fighting words. If you, especially back in the day, if you insult a woman's looks, because that's a currency. That's on the, and at that time, it was really the...
Well, the funny thing about this is...
Your value is based on your looks.
These women were like in their 50s or 60s.
Mm-hmm. Well, and imagine how hard their lives were at that point because their youth had faded.
But she claims that she was trying to pay. She was trying to say, like, you must have been a looker in your day.
Yeah.
Is what she was trying to say. And it just didn't come out right.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to get to fighting.
Yeah.
As you do. And there, I saw some images of this. So many people were into this. It was in all the newspaper. There are beautiful pictures of these women mm-hmm. facing off with the pistols.
I like
Fantastic.
It.
So Lady Beef.
Nice.
What do you have?
I have Edward Drinker Cope and... Othniel Charles Marsh.
Okay.
In the 19th century, these two, they were hunting for new dinosaur species.
Okay. And then this turned ugly?
Yes, these two scientists started out on friendly terms. Each one had named a few fossils after each other.
Okay, so they were buds.
They were buddies.
Isn't that how it always starts?
And they started this one-upmanship thing, and it became a little cutthroat. So they started naming new fossils after each other.
Were they rude, some of the names?
I think they were friends when they did that.
Okay.
Because if you both liked fossils.
And you're like, I found this, I'm calling it a Katie-saurus.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes. But then it turns ugly.
Yeah, but Jaquetasaurus,
I guess.
Ceratops.
Jaquetasaurus, yeah. And at first it's cute and we're having a good time.
We're
next
having
thing
good
you
time
know, we're
happy.
Facing off.
Right. But then they had a falling out in the late 1860s. After Marsh bribed workers to help him acquire bones from one of Cope's dig sites.
He tried to rob the dude? His friend?
Yeah.
I guess who else are you going to rob?
So over the next two decades, the pair engaged in a heated and awful malicious race to out-excavate and out-discover each other.
You think you're going to find a dinosaur bone? I'll show you.
Yeah, they hired spies to keep tabs on each other's movements.
And I wonder what actually happened.
And then Marsh referred to his rival by the code name Jones. Why would
what?
Jones?
Okay.
Yeah. They hired away each other's employees. They ordered their workers to destroy dig sites and smash fossils so the other could
claim
them.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. Okay, that's beyond the pale. Because aren't these guys, like, paleontology is their thing. They hated each other so much that they're willing to destroy something that belongs to everybody, which is the history of the earth?
Yes. So it was called the Bone Wars. The Bone Wars would eventually ruin both men professionally and financially.
I guess so when people find out they're smashing up, like, T-Rexes.
But it left paleontology all the richer because, and by the 1890s, their competition had led to the discovery of thousands of fossils. Because even though they destroyed it made them work harder and they dug up more fossils.
So can you imagine you've just uncovered, like, Pachyosaurus and it's the first one? You're all excited, you go home, you celebrate, you come back, it's smashed to bits?
They discovered thousands of fossils and 136 new dinosaur species, including the Triceratops, Stegosaurus, and Apatosaurus.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
So it actually did help humanity.
Yeah, but I mean, what about the friendship?
The friendship, not so much.
The Bone Wars.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah.
Oh, I love paleontology. I did not know that.
Yeah.
It's just so, I don't know, whatever. Everyone's petty. So here's one, 1870. Again, this is in the arts. So you think, hey, mm-hmm. you know, like, have a little composure? No. Edward Manet and his buddy, of course, they are friends, Edmond Durante, who was a critic. Mm-hmm. So apparently, Manet got really, really upset because he and Edmond Durante had been friends mm-hmm. forever. And Edmond Durante had written some criticism about one of Manet's works, but it was just like something very noncommittal. Like, it wasn't positive or negative. It's described as dispassionate. Mm-hmm. He made some work and it was work, yeah. that kind of thing. Oh. But apparently Manet read it in the papers, got so pissed off, was looking for him, busted up into the Paris Cafe, Paris Cafe Gerbois, where they were known to hang out.
Okay.
And just rolled up in there and slapped him in the face.
Nice.
Didn't even say anything. Just walked in and psh,
oh,
right in
I
the
like
face.
I like his style.
And then challenged.
You know what that's for.
Yeah, you know what that's for. And then challenged into a sword duel.
I love it.
According to the police report, so I guess it got, you know, that they shouldn't have been dueling. The men faced each other on February 23rd in the Forest of Saint-Germain. And the famous writer Emile Zola was there, who was Manet's second. Because uh-huh. when you duel, you have to bring, like, a partner with you. Someone who's going to hold the case, because it's, right. like, a special case. But then also who's going to attend to you, but then also to make sure everything is, like, kosher.
And maybe carry you out.
Maybe carry you out, yeah, bandage you up. Or be like, yeah, you know.
Yeah, a little, so, little cheerleading.
So their swords allegedly struck only once, but with such force that they broke.
Oh.
They both shattered.
Wow.
Durante had a little wound. Manet was like, you know what? This is good enough for me. Mm-hmm. I have won. I have won. This is good enough. And then they became friends again and started going back to the cafe and hanging out.
See, that's guys for you.
His pride was hurt. He thought his friend wrote something that was negative. It was actually just kind of neutral. Mm-hmm. And that's strong, though. Mm-hmm. Like, just walk up to somebody and smack him in the face?
Yeah.
We live in a very violent society now, but that's... That doesn't... I've never seen that in a cafe.
Yeah, you can't do that. But that was usually the invitation to the duel. So when you got smacked in the face, you knew you're not going to get punched and kicked.
Yeah.
You knew it was... The duels. A duel's coming.
I thought they would smack them with gloves. But I guess they just went for, like, a more personal...
Well, if it's summer, you don't have the gloves.
That's true. I didn't think about the fashions going along with the seasons. So what do you have?
I have some music beef.
Okay. Musical beef.
This is between Kid Rock and Tommy Lee.
Wow. Really? Yeah.
When Kid Rock started dating Motley Crue drummer Tommy Lee's ex-wife, Pamela Anderson, mm-hmm. Lee was none too pleased.
Really? I didn't know she was with him.
Yeah.
You know what? I like Pamela Anderson. I thought she was like a really cool person. I don't know why she's hanging out with all those dicks.
Yeah.
Can't she get any man?
Yeah.
Get yourself a physicist.
Yeah, right? She could get anybody.
Yeah.
Why is she hanging out with these rockers?
And then Kid Rock gave her, like, hepatitis or something like that. She was going around telling everybody not to sleep with him. In any case.
But in his album, Never a Dull Moment, released the following year, featuring the song Face to Face, which threatened an unnamed enemy. Some speculated was Kid Rock.
Really?
Yeah.
But seriously, you've seen Kid Rock.
Yeah.
Not trying to mess with him.
Yeah.
Like, he seems like the kind of guy that you wouldn't know until it was over.
Right.
He's just lying on the ground bleeding, like, what happens, Kid Rock?
Right. 4 years after...
He's from Detroit.
Oh, he is.
That's what I think. Isn't he from Detroit?
Oh.
He's one of these guys who's like, he's not... Like, his image is not a made-up thing. Like, he's actually just kind of like a rough dude.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's not having it.
4 years after calling off their engagement, Rock and Anderson married, only to divorce 5 months later. According to Rock...
What was the other guy at this point like, see?
Yeah. According to Rock, during the divorce...
To Rock?
Lee...
According to Mr. Rock.
According to Mr. Rock, Lee sent him insulting emails from Anderson's BlackBerry.
Really? What kind of insulting emails?
I don't know. In 2007, at the...
Isn't it like a white MTV. Trash, like, you know, that kind of stuff, like calling each other white trash?
Yeah, I guess.
I'm just trying to think of, like, what
but
are these guys?
He was going through her.
Yeah.
So it looked like it
you
was coming
suck.
From. Yeah. Whatever. At the MTV VMAs, the two met face to face and Rock knocked Lee's hat off and punched him.
Excuse me? He knocked his hat
off? Yeah. Lee responded on his website calling Rock Kid Pebble.
Nice. I like your style, Mr. Lee. Kid Pebble.
Yeah, testifying about an incident in an unrelated case 3 years later, because Kid Rock had gotten to a fight in a Waffle House.
Because Kid Rock.
Kid Rock stated that Lee had called him and apologized, and now we're friends again.
Because neither of them had Pamela Anderson.
Right.
So they're like, whatever.
Yeah.
And so in a Waffle House, that's what I'm saying. Kid Rock is for what is he? He's just like, I'm still keeping it real.
Yeah.
That's kind of like there was beef years ago between Moby and Eminem. And yeah. I'm like, it's like an anorexic midget by SmackDown. Yeah, yeah. Like, who cares? Yeah. Who cares? They kind of look the same.
Yeah.
Moby. I like it. Oh, that's so I have another lady beef.
Okay.
This is from 1552.
Ooh.
Isabella de Carazzi and Diambra, which I think is an amazing name. I've never heard mm-hmm. the name. Diambra de Petinella. So, Italians. Apparently there was this really hot guy. He was the most sought after bachelor in mm-hmm. Naples in the 16th century. Fabio de Zerasola. Mm-hmm. Everybody wanted a piece of him. Mm-hmm. So did these two ladies. Apparently at this time it was common in Italy for men to fight over women. Mm-hmm. But the women were like, we don't want to get cut out of this. So these two women were competing for his affection and decided to sword fight mm-hmm. to see who would get him. The outcome is unknown, but I think neither of them got him in the end. But it was like immortalized mm-hmm. as like this big duel over this guy Fabio. And I, you know, I'm gonna just go out on a limb here. It's Italy. This guy's probably like, I am the man.
Yeah.
He's like, you say ladies are fighting over you? No, women are actually fighting over me.
Coming to fisticuffs over me.
They're bringing out swords to fight over me. Who does that? So Isabella and Diambra, neither of them got Fabio, but there's a painting that was painted in 1636 by Jose de Roberta, and it's the Duel of Women, Duelo de Mujeres, Duel of Women. Okay. So I'm going to look that up, because I want to see if it looks as cool as the pictures of the other two, the female beef from the later time.
We should have a series of paintings Braddock in our own homes.
Of women dueling?
Women dueling.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I like that. I feel like those would be like bathroom paintings. Mm-hmm. You know, like the wallpaper where there's like the scenes on it. Instead of like a scene of like something pastoral, just chicks fighting. Mm-hmm. Old school. Swords, pistols, what have you.
I like it.
All right, what do you have?
I have one here in honor of our very first podcast episode that we had where we talked about Faith No More. So
was there beef?
There was beef between Red Hot Chili Peppers and Faith No More.
Okay, once again, these are two bands who seem like they would cry sooner than fight. Do you know what I mean? I like both bands, but Anthony Kiedis, he's more of a lover. And then a fighter.
Yeah, right? Isn't he?
Yeah. With his hair.
Yeah. So when Red Hot Chili Peppers frontman Anthony Kiedis saw the video of Faith No More's 1990 hit Epic that we talked about.
Mm, which is awesome.
Yeah, he felt like he was being mocked and ripped off by the Faith No More's singer Mike Patton.
Why?
He later said it was like looking in the mirror. The two bands threatened.
No, it's not. They are so completely.
They don't look alike. Because they both had long, dark hair. So then they think.
But I'm sorry. I was really into both bands. And never once have I thought about them in the same
sentence. Never, ever, ever.
Faith No More?
Yeah. The two bands threatened each other in the press, but the feud soon fizzled.
How? Were they like, Billboard, you tell that guy.
Yeah. In 1999, it was resurrected when related band Mr. Bungle.
Yeah, okay.
Appeared at the Halloween show as the Red Hot Chili Peppers, mockingly performed Red Hot Chili Peppers songs in costume as the band.
What?
So they're at Halloween, they dressed up as Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, and that's their costume.
Mr. Bungle. Kiedis was not amused and had Mr. Bungle removed them from the Big Day Out Festival in Australia and New Zealand, and threatened not to perform with Red Hot Chili Peppers if Mr. Bungle was on the bill.
Okay, you know what? Get a grip, dude. Have a sense of humor.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, exactly.
If another podcast was like, we're doing a Hey You Know It podcast, I would listen to that podcast. Yeah. I might even put a link to it.
Right.
Come on, whatever.
Right.
They should have dressed up as them. They should have dressed up as Faith No More if they had any balls.
Right.
And done them.
Right.
Right?
Exactly. So that's some
weird. I had no idea. This is like, I don't know, lean beef. I don't know. Because they didn't actually fight. Mm-hmm. Back at, like, if they were real rock stars, it would have been a brawl. Mm-hmm. You know, if they were punk, it would have been a brawl. So I have here, I brought this one in especially for Katie. This is Olivia de Havilland versus Joan Fontaine. Did not know they were sisters.
Yes, I love Olivia de Havilland.
So what are your favorite Olivia de Havilland films? These are Hollywood stars from the 30s and 40s.
The Heiress is one of my all-time favorite movies. And a great movie to watch, everybody.
So you're de Havilland. You're on team de Havilland.
Yes.
So they're both Academy Award winners. They both have stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. They're both acclaimed, known for their film roles in the 30s and 40s, and they're also sisters, so you know that this is family beef. Although you would never know that, and I didn't. I don't know much about both of these women, but I never connected them together. But they are sisters, and they are very close in age as well. For more than 3 decades, they didn't speak to each other because they had such a bitter rivalry. So apparently they started fighting as children.
Oh.
When they competed for the attention of their mother, Lilia Augusta Ruse, who is Lillian Fontaine. So they grew up in the business. They're trying to get their mother's attention. Mm-hmm. They could not. So the feud increased as they battled over everything in Hollywood. Men, film roles, awards, and they went head-to-head in 1942 for the Oscar for Best Actress. It was Fontaine. Joan Fontaine was in Alfred Hitchcock's Suspicion, which is awesome. Olivia de Havilland, your favorite, was in Hold Back the Dawn. Fontaine won. And I guess from then on. So their mother died in 1975.
Okay.
That's when they stopped talking because Fontaine accused de Havilland of being a B because the mother died and she didn't tell her.
Oh.
De Havilland said that Fontaine was simply too busy to attend the services. So she didn't tell her that their mother died. And then she told people that her sister didn't have time to come. They stopped talking and this article's in 2011.
Yeah, how do you
I don't
come
know
back
if they're still
that?
Alive. They never talked after that. That was the end. Yeah. I mean, talk about a touche though. I mean, that's like sticking it to somebody.
Yeah.
They hated each other. And
so she really got the last laugh.
Yeah, the last
laugh. I got to go to mom's funeral and you didn't.
And you didn't.
And you looked like a jerk.
And they're both incredibly beautiful, incredibly talented. And they hated each other. And they competed for everything.
Yeah.
Fascinating. So Olivia de Havilland versus Joan Fontaine. Didn't know that they were related, but they probably would have been better off had they not been.
Mm.
So there's some family beef.
Wow.
What do you
have? That's
crazy, huh?
That's crazy.
Not telling your sister that your mother is dead.
Wow.
Beef.
Paul McCartney and Yoko Ono.
Really? I mean, I know she had beef with all of them, but particularly
him, yes.
And they're the only ones left. Oh, no, wait, yeah. Ringo Starr is still alive, but who cares?
Yeah, his...
he's not doing anything.
Just go back to whatever you're doing.
Thomas the Tank Engine, yeah.
To say Paul McCartney and Yoko Ono got off on the wrong foot would be putting it mildly. According to John Lennon, when he and Ono were staying with McCartney when they first started dating, McCartney left them a note saying, brace yourself, there's a slur coming up.
I knew it.
You and your drab tart think you're hot shit.
Really?
Yes.
I knew he was a bigot.
Yep.
He's very conservative now, too. He's all, like, pro-USA. I'm like, you're not even an American.
Yeah. Betcha. He wants to build a wall.
Yes, I'm sure.
His
old ass.
Yeah, the central issue was that Ono had started accompanying Lennon to the Beatles recording sessions. McCartney had complained that she'd even sit on his amp, and he'd have to go ask her to move to adjust the volume.
Mm-hmm.
But in fairness, Ono later claimed that if she hadn't gone with Lennon, he wouldn't have shown up for the rehearsals at all.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Because they're like, they were always together. I'm like, they were always together, but that he was always doing the Beatles stuff. And she was there. And I thought maybe it was a thing of her being like, you gotta go do this thing. I don't know that much about the Beatles, but I always felt that John Lennon could have just not had the Beatles and done his own thing.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean... Paul McCartney on his own?
Right.
Wings?
Nobody, yeah, right.
Wings?
Wink, come on.
I'm just going to leave it at
yes.
that.
Yes.
And Ringo Starr? Who cares? George Harrison, a genius in his own right, but he was doing stuff that his solo stuff that I've heard is not as commercial.
Right, right. So
you know, it's not oobla-dee-oobla-da.
So altogether, they made the commercial success, and each one of them would have done like whatever they would have done, but it would never have made
but then,
the money.
I mean, Imagine versus Wings.
Imagine versus Jet.
Yeah, versus Jet.
Yeah.
Like, no.
So even after John Lennon died, they're still fighting about the songwriting credits. That's the central issue. But
he wrote all the songs, right?
Yeah, basically, I think.
I thought that he was the one who died. Like, I'll just say this, because I know a lot of people are really into the Beatles. I think most of their shit's super corny.
Mm-hmm.
Some of their stuff I like, but generally it's like, eh.
Right,
you know?
It wasn't our thing. And I will do a double beef only because it's kind of related.
Double beef?
Yes.
Second helping of beef.
Courtney Love and David Grohl.
Really?
Yes.
I thought you were going to say Courtney Love and Madonna. Because they had beef.
Oh, they had beef.
I think they had beef because they were sleeping together.
Oh.
And then I think Madonna threw her over.
Oh.
But that's my
That's your idea.
Yeah. I don't think they're lesbians. Conspiracy. I'm not saying that. I think they were in a relationship. Because they were probably either enamored with each other, it seemed like a cool thing to do. You know how ladies do.
Mm-hmm.
And then Madonna was like, be out.
Could have been. Yeah. Could have been. But in the 18 years since Kurt Cobain died, relations between his widow and surviving members of Nirvana have gotten progressively worse.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Okay.
Yeah. The most of it, venom centered on David Grohl.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed to start with... It seemed to start when Grohl went on Howard Stern in the late 90s and was asked to name his favorite love... Song of Loves, and he replied, Teenage Whore, because I know she wrote it.
Really?
So he's like a little, you know, he's just one of these guys that,
I have to say, I love Hole. That is actually one of my favorite bands. I went to see them in concert. I don't really care for Courtney Love either way. I don't, you know, I don't really get involved, but I love her music, and I think she's extremely talented.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Love now claims...
And she's alive.
Yeah. Love claims that this is the reason she hates him, and also that Cobain hated him, and that he stole money from her, and most recently he hit on her daughter with the daughter between that he had with
Bean?
Bean, Frances Bean.
What?
And, yeah. So apparently David Grohl hit on Frances Bean, and plus...
Yeah. That's so skeevy and gross.
But David Grohl, I went through this with somebody else, David Grohl is like the Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
And these two bands, in Nirvana and Beatles, two bands that had kind of revolutionized music in different decades.
But also,
they all have the same personalities, all these band members. Two are the same guys, and they both have beef with the women were with the talented ones.
The women were doing things on their own.
Yeah.
Like Courtney Love, because I lived in Seattle in the mid-90s. And when I got out there, I was so fascinated to find that, because, you know, we're hearing about Nirvana and all these different bands, but there are so many female rockers out there who were doing really good work but not getting anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And they were involved in the community, so of course there were relationships and things like that going on. Why should you be upset because the leader of your band has a girlfriend?
Mm-hmm.
Yoko Ono was an artist in her own right. I don't particularly care for her work, but she was doing her own thing. And being with John Lennon didn't necessarily help her.
Right.
Right? Like, she's doing her own stuff.
It's the same thing. Courtney Love, Yoko Ono.
I think he was just jealous.
Yeah.
I mean, who's his girlfriend?
Nobody.
He's hitting on a little girl.
Yeah. Yes.
And Courtney Love said that Kurt Cobain did. It makes sense because it's hard for me to believe that, don't most bands not get along?
Yeah. Because they work together.
Because they work together.
They all have their opinions.
They all have their opinions. So, I like that.
Yeah.
Some celebrity beef. I got some celebrity beef here during the time of the great Bard himself.
Ah.
This is Ben Jonson and Gabriel Spencer in 1598. So this is during Shakespeare's time. Ben Jonson, who was a contemporary of Shakespeare, they knew each other. He had a rough upbringing, and he became a playwright, a poet, and an actor. So he came out of the gutter. He did all this stuff. They knew each other. But he also styled himself as kind of a badass.
Mm-hmm.
So he was going around sleeping with ladies, drinking. He became a soldier for the hell of it, marauding, all that kind of stuff. And he wrote very inflammatory poems. And plays, which I like.
Inflammatory.
But this
poems.
Is like rappers,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
It's beef.
Yeah.
Like, these guys are artists, and they're using their words to attack people. Because they're also, you know, they're lovers and fighters. So on September 22nd, 1598, he killed another actor over called Gabriel Spencer over a duel that is thought to have come out of they were quarreling over which theater group was Elizabethan England's finest. So it started over a beef of who has the best theater company.
I like that.
And then they dueled. He killed the guy. He went on trial. He was found guilty, but he got through a loophole called benefit of clergy, and where you could recite a Bible verse to escape the death penalty. So I bet you he had a friend. I bet you someone interceded for him. So he said a Bible verse or several Bible verses. They said, okay, no death penalty. They took all his shit, and then they thumb-branded him. Oh. I'm not sure what that is. I should have looked it up. So either they put something on his thumb or they took his thumb off. And then that same year, they put his hit play, Every Man in His Humor, was produced. And William Shakespeare played the role.
Wow.
Yeah, I played a role in it.
Wow.
How awesome is that?
That is awesome.
So this guy escaped death. Killed the guy, escaped death, but then still had his play, like, be a hit and had Shakespeare be in the play. Pretty cool.
That's cool. I would love that.
Yeah, so some Elizabethan beef. Elizabethan.
Elizabethan
beef.
Okay. I have the Twain Layard duel.
I did not know about this. And I love Mark Twain.
Yes, me too. Nothing really came of it, and it doesn't have any great impact on history, but it's one of the funnier ones.
Well, I feel like it matters not, but yeah. It's humorous.
While living in Virginia City, Nevada, the sharp-witted satirist Mark Twain was up to his usual pot stirring and writing outrageous...
You know how we do.
Yeah, writing outrageous editorials for the Territorial Enterprise that locals dubbed him The Incorrigible. So that was his nickname, okay. The Incorrigible.
When old Sam Clemens.
Right, when Twain wrote a piece erroneously accusing a rival paper, the Virginia City Union, mm-hmm. of reneging on a pledge to charity, the publisher...
Really?
Yes, the publisher of the paper, James Layard, made such a stink over the false accusation that Twain challenged him to a duel. So Mark Twain's
really?
Like, we're gonna... Yeah.
He was young. This is early in
yes,
his career.
This is early, and he was the one who made the mistake, but...
But he's like, whatever, let's do this.
Yeah. So Twain's...
My bad, but I'm gonna fix it.
Right. Twain's second, Steve Gillis, took Twain to practice his shooting, only mm-hmm. to find that the men's pen was truly mightier than his sword.
No.
And Twain couldn't hit the side of a barn.
Can you imagine being the second man and being like, dude, what the hell?
Yeah.
Why did you do this?
Right.
You don't know your way around a piece?
So, filled with fear, Twain collapsed.
What? At the duel?
Yeah, before the
duel.
When he realized, when he started shooting.
He just passed out.
He's just like, I'm going to die.
Has anyone seen Mark Twain? Yeah, he's on the floor.
I'm going to die. Oh.
That's so un-Mark Twain.
So as Layard and his men were making their way over, so the guy's coming for the duel, Gillis grabbed a bird, shot his head off, and stood admiring the corpse. Layard second said, who did that? And Gillis responded that Twain had shot the bird's head off from a good distance and was capable of doing it with every shot.
His second man said that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then he gravely intoned, now you don't want to fight that man. It's just like suicide.
Dude, you don't want to go over there.
You better just settle this thing now. And so the ploy worked and the men reconciled. And
that's
it.
I love it. I was like, it came around to Mark Twain at the end.
Right.
He passed. I wonder if he got there and was like, how hard can this be? You know, let's just go. Oh, man.
Yeah. Like, the severity of
it. That's what the second man does.
Yeah.
That's excellent.
But I like that the second man grabbed a bird. Where did he grab? Like, what kind of bird
did he shoot? He's probably like, give me that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like that one.
Yeah. What do you have?
So I have here Adidas versus Puma.
Ooh.
Now,
I can't wait to hear this. You were saying about this.
So, earlier. And then the company, so two, it's like, I don't even know how to start.
All right. Take a moment.
It's 1920.
Okay.
Germany. Two brothers, Adolf and Rudolf Dassler.
You're kidding.
Adolf and Rudolf Dassler. They launch a shoe company together.
Unfortunate.
And in their mother's laundry room.
Okay.
Right, so they just get together, and their business, so they are making shoes, and then no one had really heard of them until the 1930s, when they gave some shoes to people who were in the Olympics, and apparently one of them won a gold medal, and so it brought fame and fortune to the shoes. So, but the sales spiked, but then they started having beef.
Okay.
So World War II happens, and their relationship breaks off completely. No one is sure what caused the rift. They're saying it's miscommunication. I'm going to guess one of them was on one side and one was on the other side. I'm just going to say that. But no one knows. So after an Allied bomb attack, Adolf and his wife took cover in a bomb shelter that was already occupied by Rudolf and his family. So that Rudolf and his family were in the bomb shelter. You know, some shit happens. Adolf and his family come running in. And then Rudolf says he overheard Adolf say, those dirty bastards are back again. He was talking about the Allied people.
Oh.
But he's saying he thought he was talking about their family.
Okay.
So they're in a bomb shelter together. He overhears something and he's like, that's it. By the end of the war, they split the company. Adolf, who went by Adi, named his business Adidas after Adolf Dassler.
Okay.
So he combined his name together. And then his brother tried to do the same thing and came up with Ruda, which is dumb and obviously didn't work. And he later changed it to Puma.
Okay.
So the companies were in the same town, the town of Herzogenaurach. I probably didn't say that right because I don't know any German. But they were on opposite sides of the river.
These two rival
factories.
Well, we all thought that Adidas meant all day I dream about sex.
Yes. I had no, that's what we, and I also didn't, we are the only people that say Adidas. Everyone else says Adidas. The
really?
Rest of the world, I've never heard anyone say Adidas except for us. And we always think of my Adidas.
Yeah.
You know? So they, so you have Puma on one side of the river, Adidas on the other side. Bitter rivals until the very end. And finally in 2009, long after both brothers were died, Puma and Adidas were like, let's just end this and have a friendly soccer match.
Wow.
So the employees from both, so now the companies are completely independent from each other. But they had a little soccer match together. So Puma and Adidas are, you know, two rival companies by Adolf and Rudolf Dassler. Mm-hmm. I had no idea.
I didn't, had no idea.
I had no idea they were German.
Who won the soccer match and then what happened afterwards?
It doesn't say.
Yeah.
But they said the game was friendly.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, I have Vladimir Putin and
oh God.
Pussy Riot.
Oh, yeah. This is a great one.
Yes. Okay, Pussy Riot is an all-female Russian rock collective that plays music solely as a vehicle of political protest.
Yeah, and they're like moms and stuff, too.
They're what?
They're moms.
They're moms.
They're like regular women.
But they're kind of, you never know who is Pussy Riot.
Oh, that's right, because they wear balaclavas, right? They wear masks.
They wear masks, and then they'll show up just on the spot. There's no announcement or anything, and they'll just play. And they'll usually play in places that are controversial.
Yeah.
Like,
they're guerrilla style performance artists who protest.
Right, right. So nobody really knows who Pussy Riot.
Pussy Riot. Who is Pussy Riot?
It could be anybody.
It could be us.
It could be us.
We could be Pussy Riot.
So they shot to international stardom when three of the members were tried and convicted of hooliganism motivated by religious hatred. And they were sentenced to 2 years in prison for each performing a short song in Moscow's main cathedral.
Yeah, because they hurt the church so much.
Yeah, so that's what they ran up onto the altar.
Yeah,
they sang a quick song.
Yeah, and then they got out.
It. Mm-hmm. And even the church was like, it's all right. It's fine.
Yeah, what do they care?
You know, it's like they didn't like it, but they weren't going to get upset about it.
Because it's the church. Right? Because you're supposed to turn the other cheek.
Right. So the Russian government, however, Vladimir Putin, didn't like it, and he, you know, had them thrown in prison.
And that shows you how powerful they are.
Yes.
That he arrested them. He was frightened by them.
He doesn't want any expression.
Yeah.
He doesn't want any.
He was frightened by three women in masks.
Yeah. And the titles of three of the Pussy Riot's scant six songs address Putin specifically. What they're called, one is called Protests in Russia, Putin Chickened Out.
Putin Chickened Out.
The second song is Holy Mary, Drive Putin Away.
Okay.
And the third is Putin Sets the Fire of Revolutions.
This is not anti-church at all.
No, but they took place.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, I didn't know that that was, I thought they did something that actually critiqued the religion, which I don't have a problem with either, but this was all just, no wonder he was so pissed off.
Yeah, it was, he doesn't want them.
He doesn't want people protesting.
Yeah.
As far as I know, they served their time, and they're back out.
Yeah.
And thanks to Vladimir Putin, they're huge.
Yeah.
Everybody, no one really knew who they were before internationally. Mm-hmm. Now everyone knows who they are.
Right. And I always thought, when I heard about them, I was like, oh, that's a great comedy group name for a girl group.
Pussy Riot.
Yeah.
I thought they were...
funny ladies.
Like, just hardcore rock, you know, rock musicians. And then I started reading, I was like, oh no, I can see why they're extremely scary.
It's performance art and political statements.
And political statements. And then apparently you cannot do that. Speaking of the church, here's a beef that actually was solved in 1992, resolved. It is Vatican versus Galileo.
Oh.
So the Pope, it says, this is in 1992, the Pope will formally close a 13-year investigation into the church's 1633 condemnation of Galileo, which forced the astronomer and physicist to recant his discovery. So basically, Galileo was just saying correctly. So Ptolemy said that the Earth was the center of the universe.
Okay.
Galileo took a look and was like, "Hey, guess what? The Earth is not the center of the universe." Unfortunately, somewhere in the Bible,
and it's not all about you.
It's not all about you.
By the way,
apparently, somewhere in the Bible, it says. Or the interpretation is that the Earth is the center of the universe. I don't remember ever reading that, but that's the Catholic Church's interpretation, or what they were telling all of their followers who couldn't read anyway what the Bible was saying. So even though he had the Medicis behind him and the Barberinis and a lot of famous patrons of the time who were powerful, the church, his observations led him to proof of the Copernican theory of the solar system, which the sun and not the earth is at the center. And the Inquisition was like, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
So they were going to execute him unless he, said that he was wrong.
Okay.
And he didn't want to. He tried and tried. But in the end, he had to save himself from being burned at the stake.
Wow.
Which is what they were going to do. So Pope John Paul said that the scientist was imprudently opposed. I'm like, you guys did what you always do, is you try to, someone had an idea, it's science, you didn't like it because he was challenging your power, and so you threatened to kill him. So the theory had been presented originally in 1543 by a Polish scientist, Copernicus, in opposition to the prevailing theory, as I said, which was Ptolemy, that the sun and not the earth are in the center. So, and it's saying here in 1616, the Copernican view was declared heretical because it refuted strict biblical interpretation that, quote, God fixed the earth upon his foundation, not to be moved forever, unquote. I don't see why that says that earth is at the center of the universe. I'm not sure.
Okay.
But you know how religion is. Yeah. It's all about control. It's not about necessarily truth. So, but Galileo actually got permission from Pope Urban VIII, who was a friend of one of his patrons, to keep looking into it. Mm-hmm. So the church was like, yeah. He was like, can I look at this? Because he was a Christian. Can I look at this? They said, sure. He looked at it. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he had a piece of equipment that, you know, he had a microscope, or not a microscope, a telescope, and he could see what was actually going on. And then he came up with the answer. They didn't like it.
Yeah, right.
Right? They didn't like it. And he said, what's the problem? There's no, I can be a Christian and also be a scientist and study science. I don't see how these two things are mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. The church disagreed. They said his views were false and erroneous, and then they imprisoned him. He was old at this point. He was sick. They were threatening him with torture, and so on April 30th, 1633, he said, I'll recant. Mm-hmm. But then they said as he was leaving his recantation, he whispered under his breath, "E pur si muove," which means, even so it does move. So basically on the way out, he was like, no.
Yeah.
They're still at the center, just saying. So they, the Catholic Church went back, and 350 years later after all this, they're saying that he is right. I don't see what the point is. Who cares?
Yeah.
You made a huge mistake. Just leave it. And also, who cares?
Yeah.
I guess the idea is that they're saying, like, if the church makes a mistake, they will say that they've made a mistake. But, like, whatever. Who cares?
No, but the church is supposed to be, or the Pope is supposed to be infallible when it comes to religious matters. But this is not a...
Well, they're saying this is a, you know, everything is a religious matter, is it not?
Oh, got it. Got it.
So, yeah, so they pardoned Galileo after they made him feel bad 350 years ago. So that beef is now squashed.
Okay.
What do you have?
I have Sinead O'Connor and Frank Sinatra.
Oh, yeah, I remember this. This is why I don't particularly care for Frank Sinatra.
In 1990, Sinead vowed to cancel a show in New Jersey after learning that the Garden State Arts Center traditionally played the national anthem before the future talent took the stage. It wasn't out of disrespect for America, O'Connor insisted. The singer had a policy of not having national anthems played before the concerts in any country.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Including her own. Because they have nothing to do with music in general.
True. It's all about jingoism and patriotism.
Right. So the venue relented and Sinead performed, but she was banned from playing there in the future. The incident made headlines, prompting Frank Sinatra to react. So when he took the same stage a short while after O'Connor, he told the audience that he'd like to kick her in the ass.
Wow.
In the ass.
That's nice.
Yeah.
What a dick.
Yeah.
I'd like to vivid violence upon this person because they have a different opinion than me.
Right, and O'Connor later told Esquire magazine that she could never hit Frank Sinatra because he's like 78 years old of age and it'll probably kill him.
Oh, I remember that too.
But she's got a point.
She has a point, and it's her thing. I'm sorry, as a performer, I don't want that stuff played. First of all, I don't agree with it.
Yeah.
I'm not patriotic. And what does it have to do with anything? It's not a baseball game.
Right.
Why do you play the national anthem?
Yeah.
It's so bizarre. There's a lot of stuff going on in the paper now because a lot of athletes, especially athletes of color, don't agree with it. I did a little research. Apparently, the third, The third verse?
Mm-hmm.
Of was it the Star Spangled Banner? I think it's something like that. It's like racist. So, you know, so you have to look into all of these things. But, like, why should you play the national anthem before a concert?
Yeah, well, shouldn't you be doing that? Why don't you just play it, like, before you go to work in the courthouse? If you are an employee of the state, then...
But it's like, why deal with it at all?
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to see, like, a, you know, a sweet concert and have to deal with that crap. I don't know. They play it before, like, I don't know, a Red Hot Chili Peppers concert?
Right, yeah. Like, are they doing it before every concert?
Yeah, like, I wanted to see The Cure. They didn't play it.
Right.
I don't know. We're running out of time, but I would feel so bad if I didn't just quickly mention Aaron Burr.
Of That's course. It. Like the granddaddy.
The granddaddy of the duel.
Of the beefs.
Aaron Burr, who killed Alexander Hamilton, one of the most notorious traitors in history. Apparently, this guy was rising up through the ranks, and then at a certain point decided he wanted to get Louisiana for himself. And got put it out there, got double-crossed. So he has a very, very interesting background. But apparently, you know, he's known as just the man who killed Alexander Hamilton. Wow. In one of the greatest duels in U.S. history. There's so much to cover in it, and I wish I could talk about it more, but I just thought I'd throw that name out there, Aaron Burr.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise. And let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at heyyouknowit.com. Thanks. And famous right. beefs. Can you think of it? Are there any other beefs that you did not have a chance?
Oh, there's so many beefs.
There's so much beef. Do you have any a beef in your life?
A beef in my life? Oh, yeah. I always have to have one argument going with one person.
at a time?
At a time, yeah. Just throughout my life, I always have to have one fight.
I have one.
Keeps the blood flowing.
I have a nemesis from summer camp. I won't say who they are, but I just, that is my big, it's like one person that you hope, I don't care if I am 100 years old and I'm in a wheelchair, I'll roll up next to her and try to punch her in the throat.
Yeah.
That is my beef.
Yeah.
It's like a long-standing beef of something real. I don't even remember why, but that's how beef is.
Yeah. It really, you don't forget, like, love is that way.
Yes, beef is that way.
You never not love somebody once you love them. And then when you have a beef.
And if the beef doesn't get settled.
It's still there.
It's still there.